Also, let me thank the Perimeter Institute. It's my first time here and actually also my first time in Canada. And so far, apart from the weather, everything has been fine. So what I will talk on about is Galileo maps. So in particular, I will show you that there are ways of writing the Galilean operators in different ways. And it is also possible to connect these two ways of writing the Galilean operators. So if you're not fond of Galilean operators, you can actually erase everything that I just said. And think that I will show you that it's possible to write the breaking of a space-time symmetry in two different ways. And it is also possible to connect these two different ways. Now, in general, for internal symmetry, there's not even a way of mentioning the fact that physically, different realization of the breaking symmetry are physically different, but for space-time symmetry, it can be the case. So this paper that I have here contains what I will talk about. It's a work with Paolo Criminelli, which is my PhD advisor, and with these other two people, Marco Serone and Enrico Trincherini. So this is the plan of the talk. So first, I will introduce the Galilean operators. I will try to motivate why they are interesting for phenomenology, but also from a pure quantum field theory point of view. And then I will show you how you can construct the Galilean Lagrangians. In particular, I will show two ways, a geometrical one and another one, which is through the Kossoff construction. And then I will try to tackle the issue of the equivalence of the different ways of writing the Kossoff. And in particular, we show you that there are perturbative calculations which leads to the same answer, while there are non-perturbative calculations, and in particular, the propagation of perturbation around non-trivial backgrounds, which leads to different answers in the two realizations. So, and then I conclude with the general take-home message of the talk. So let me start. So why Galileans? So originally, Galileans have been introduced as a modification of gravity. In particular, we know that there's a precise calculation that one can do in quantum field theory, which is the expectation value of the vacuum, which leads to a cosmological constant, which is just 120 or so order of magnitude wrong. So people have tried to modify gravity, and in particular to understand the current expansion of the universe in a quantum field theory framework. And for example, you can think about the DGP model. So in the DGP model, Valli, Gabbadazza, and Porati try to dilute gravity in a fifth dimension. And in particular, in the decoupling limit, the description of this dilution can be attributed to a scalar field. This scalar field couples to other matter fields and it changes basically the expansion. So the point is that you want to modify gravity at order one at the cosmological scales to take into account the expansion. But you don't want to modify it on the solar system scale, where we have stringent constraint on GR. So in order to achieve this, you have to have a scalar field, for example, we couple to the matter fields. And its dynamics must be highly nonlinear. So it has to have a highly nonlinear solution. And for example, in the TGP model, this scalar field, which is usually called pi, basically interpolate between a gravitational potential, which is 1 over r on the scale of a solar system, and 1 over r squared on a larger scale. So in some sense, the Galileans take also this point of view. So they can modify gravity at a larger scale, but not a smaller scale, and have a highly nonlinear solution. Right, if you want, yeah. Yeah, you can. Yeah, sure. In the DGP case, you modify gravity because actually you're putting also a fifth dimensional Ricci. In this case, in the Galileans, it's just a scalar field.
But if they don't couple minimally to matter, then you can do it. Just you are with this particular
formula
that we're focusing on.
Yeah.
We're all
minimally. Gravity is what you usually have is GR.
Yeah.
And then you just add a scalar field.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how can you construct the Lagrangian? So So originally, the Lagrangians are constructed by asking the field to nonlinearize a symmetry, which is this one. In particular, there's a shift on the pi, and also there's a term linear in x mu. And in particular, it is called Galilean theory symmetry because the derivatives of the field just shift by a constant b mu. So the Lagrangians that you obtain from nonlinear realizing this symmetry gives all the second equation of motion which are all the second order. So in four dimensions, there are just five Lagrangians. The sixth one is actually a total derivative. And from the sixth on, the seventh on, they are just exactly zero. So the structure is very clear. I will not write the fifth because generally it is already quite complicated. In the case of the conformal Galilean, on which we'll talk about later, it's even too long. I think that half of you will just leave if I write it down. So the structure is clear, though. At the n order, there is just so at the n Lagrangian contains n fields, and there are two n minus two derivatives acting on the fields. Sorry?
Are you being careful here, or are you only being talking around flat space,
only two. And for example, in the coupling limit, this term is just the VGP term. So, but Galileans have not only been used for the acceleration, the late time acceleration of the units, but also for the early time acceleration. And in particular, in this case, this author have used the conformal Galileans, which you can see that they look a bit different. For example, there is this factor of e to the 2 pi in front and this d pi to the fourth to give a self-selecting solution.
So what's the difference between Galileo and
Galileo? Right, so the difference is the symmetry that they nonlinear realize. So the standard Galilean realizes this symmetry up here. The conformal Galileans will realize another symmetry, which I will show later. Yeah. So do you have a stick or something? Is it this one?
That's the one.
That's a weapon, actually. Right. Can I show you later? Okay. So these Lagrangians actually admit a solution which takes this form and which breaks the conformal symmetry down to the sitter. And this solution actually also grossly violates the null energy condition. But perturbation around this solution are stable. So it can be used for the early acceleration. Well, you can couple it to gravity and use the usual ADM formalism. So I think so. Yeah. So let me give you the picture of the situation. So let me draw the picture actually of standard inflation. In inflation, there is a field which is the inflaton, which has a simple Lagrangian with a standard kinetic term and a potential, which, for example, you can think that it looks like this way. So the field rolls down slowly. There is a small parameter, which is defined by this. So there's an area in which this small parameter is very small, and the universe inflates. And the universe inflates because there is a almost cosmological constant, which makes the expansion. At some point, the slow approximation is broken, for example, when epsilon is equal to 1, and inflation ends, and the universe starts not to accelerate anymore. Then the fields basically oscillate around this minima, and you have a heating. So you can imagine that this field is coupled to some other particle, chi's, or other stuff, which eventually end up in the standard model. In this case, the situation is different. So instead of starting the universe in a quasi de Sitter space, you start it, if you want, in Minkowski. So the stress tensor is zero asymptotically in the past. And the expansion is driven by the pressure of the field. There is a negative pressure of the field, which make the universe expand. But also, if you recall, for scalar field, how the energy density goes. The energy density goes like rho plus p. So when the neck is violated, this thing is negative. So rho starts to grow. And it grows until at some point the affected theory is broken in this region, which means that basically the pi is not suited anymore to describe the physics, and you have to revert to other degrees of freedom. And you can assume that in this region, basically, array heating happens. So from here, you will have the standard radiation-dominated phase. But as Paul was saying, this model predicts basically no gravitational waves. The spectrum is very blue. And you can recall that these people, actually the people who control this instrument, BICEP2, has recently announced that they have measured the tensor to scalar ratio, which is this quantity R, of which for sure you will talk about a lot. And they actually have measured a very high tensor to scalar ratio, probably the highest that one can expect. And the plot looks just magnificent. In fact, there are people who think that at the end of the story, the BICEP collaboration will have to face reality and bite at dust. But still, I'm taking this result as correct. So maybe the general scenario is not the correct one to describe the early expansion of the universe. And maybe inflation with a very simple potential, for example, phi squared, is better suited. I think this one.
Yeah, in fact,
also let me say that in general, this model also predicts zero scalar perturbation. So also the scalar spectrum should be zero, but it's very easy to couple this model with a conformally flat metric to other sectors. If this other sector, for example, somehow decays, they can produce also gravitational waves. I don't know to what extent, but I think that somehow you can work around. Right. In fact, yeah.
So
in this.
Have that fluctuation already produced and already outside the noise at that point.
Is there even a cosmological solution to describe that region, or for now it's just assuming something?
The description of the pi simply breaks down in this region, so there's no way in which you can make sense of the Lagrangian that I just shown. But nevertheless, galileans are also interesting as a quantum field theory per se. So for example, they have been extended to many cases. For example, you can consider the conformal extension, one of which I've just shown a couple of operators. But also you can consider a multi-Galilean system in which there is an internal symmetry among n Galileans, for example, or couple them to gravity, gauge fields, etc. But for what matter for this talk, I will talk about the conformal extension. So the conformal extension is obtained by asking that the Gostin nonlinear realize another symmetry, which is the conformal symmetry. And the standard way in which the fields transform is this one. Now the conformal group has 15 operators. In this case, it's broken down to Poincaré 4, which has 10 generators, and the dilation and the spatial conformal transformation are broken. Now, if you apply the reasoning of the internal symmetries, you would expect that there are 5 Goldstone that a nonlinear realize this symmetry. So this is one of the first differences between the internal symmetries and the space-time symmetries. So let me give you maybe an example, maybe two. So imagine that you have a system which is just R2, so it's empty. So the vacuum of this system has a three symmetries, which are the translation in Px, Py, and the rotation among around the axis of perpendicular. Now imagine that this system is broken because there's a lattice, for example, which completely fills the space. and so on. So the lattice clearly breaks all of these three generators. It breaks the translation along two axes and also the rotation. So the vacuum is not symmetric anymore. But of the three Goldstone that you would expect associated with the three Boltzmann generators, actually only two appears, which are the two phonons of the lattice, which are associated just with Px and Py. And this is because for space-time symmetries, the Goldstone are not independent. And you can just picture this as showing that, for example, a rotation of this axis this way is just equivalent to a space-dependent translations. And you can also see it in algebraic form. No? So J is just x times py minus y px. Let me put. So you can see that the generators are the fluctuations are not independent. And so in this case, the fluctuations are not independent, and only one Goldstone appear, which is in this case the dilaton. But also, let me give you another example, which is closer to the second way of breaking the conformal symmetry. So imagine that you have ADS5. ADS5 have the symmetry of the conformal group, so there are 15 generators. And it's broken down to Poincaré 4, which has 10 generators. Again, I didn't write before, so let me write it down. So you would expect that there are dim G minus dim H, 5 generators, but this is not the case, and there is only one. And ADS5, for example, can be broken if you have ADS and you have a brain in ADS, a brain of codimension 1. The brain, for example, if I take a gauge in which the fluctuation of the brain are just among the fifth dimension of ADS5, breaks the conformal group. And this leads to this other way of realizing the symmetry. So apart from the fact that the pi and the q have a different dimension, so pi is dimensionless, q has a dimension 1 because it represents the perturbation in the fifth components, which is dimension 1. If you want a dimension of length, better. There is this additional term, and this additional term creates, if you want, dramatic consequences for the way in which you will write the Lagrangians to nonlinearize this symmetry. So these two ways have been dubbed in this way, Weyl and Dibial representations. And this is just to show you that these Lagrangians look completely different. So for example, this is a term that was used in the Genesis. So this object here is just the box of pi with the notation written here. And this, for example, looks like the Lagrangian of DBI if you subtract a tuple term. And you can see that in this form, there are an infinite number of derivative action on the field. Also, this gamma is an infinite. So the Lagrangian looks very different. But still, they both realize the same symmetry breaking pattern. So you can ask whether these two ways of realizing the symmetry are indeed equivalent or not. So let me show you how these are generally constructed. So the geometrical picture. You can start from this conformally flat metric with this dilaton as a conformal factor. And it has been shown that you can write the Lagrangians in terms of invariance ability with this metric. And in particular, each order, you put one additional power of R, mu nu, as is shown, and the other invariant is, for example, G. Also, for the conformal case, there are just five Galileans in four dimensions. So pi 3 is a very particular case. It cannot be written with the invariance built with this metric in four dimensions. So in particular, the third Lagrangians, so the only Lagrangian which gives a second order of motion is a total derivative. And it can be expressed as a limit. So you can write it, for example, in five dimensions, and then take the limit d equal 4, and you can obtain the Lagrange. I think so. Can be.
I'm confused about the alpha 2 because, well, on shell, we know that, well, if I just took that third gravity, we know that the conformal mode, if I could vary it, that would give wrong sign gradients and would the action push around down at the below. On shell, you know you're fine. So how am I supposed to?
I think that what I'm writing here is in flat space. So this I don't think this. And I know that people has also considered this theory coupled to gravity. I'm not sure.
I think the problem is if you wanna have tensor mode. Then I think that would be a problem.
No, it's the conformal mode. It's the tensor modes are. No,
but if I just have conformal mode, I can just pick the sign of whatever I want. The sign of
it. Well, if you say and you're not going to allow any other type of matter, you say.
But other matter, I can pick their sign.
If you pick the other matter or conventional signs, this will have the wrong sign.
But this is not gravity, unless you want this to be gravity.
Well, no.
It's just a way.
You can rewrite it in terms of a gravitational theory, if I understand.
Well.
But I don't think it's as simple as replacing the eta mu nu by a dynamical
vector.
It's more subtle.
Okay, you're doing something else?
Yeah, I'm not sure how this has been extended. So in this case, this is just a way of rewriting the Lagrangians that... okay. But anyway, so if you replace this metric in this expression, what you obtain is just the terms that I have written in equation 6. I don't know if this is happy with your equation. Okay, we can. Okay, so the same can be done also from a geometrical point of view for the other representation, and in particular in this case, you can write the terms in terms of the extrinsic curvature of the induced metric of the brain and the determinant of the induced metric. But also, there's another way of writing. These Lagrangians, which is through the Kosser construction. So in this case, I've written down the conformal algebra, or at least the part which involves K and D, because I will need it later. So I will not go into the details of the construction because it's very boring. But let me say that the way in which the Vi representation is built is into with identifying the element of the coset with this parameterization. So in the case of internal symmetry, you would just write here the broken generators of the symmetry with the coordinates of this parameterization being the would-be Goldstone of the broken symmetry. But for space-time symmetry, you also have to add p mu and treat it as if it was a broken generators. And it goes from just the coordinate of the coordinate. So then one can write the Cartan form for this coset element. So I'm not going to detail of the Cartan form. What I want just to point out is that the way that coset take care of the redundant would-be Goldstone that you can find. So in the coset language, every time that a broken generator has a commutator with the translation operator, which is still proportional to another broken generator, one is able to express the Goldstone which are associated with these broken generators with the Goldstone which are associated with the other. So in the specific case, in this specific case, you can see that the commutator of the special conformal transformation with p mu involves also d. And in fact, checking in the Cartan form what is in front of the generator of dilation is an algebraic form which can be solved for the Goldstone associated with the special conformal transformation. And thus, one can solve this mode in favor of the only physical degrees of freedom, which in this case is the pi. And I think that it has been shown that in simple cases, this amount to basically integrating out the omega field after one has written down the Lagrangian. So coset construction is a very general thing, for example, done by CCWZ for the coset construction in the case of the internal symmetries. Basically, it amounts of finding what is what are the Broken generators, and you can write down using the Cartan form what are the covariant derivative of the theory, and build with these the Lagrangians which are globally invariant under the transformation of the entire group. And you can find the fields which transform linearly linearly under the action of the unbroken group. So in this sense, the fields will transform linearly under the unbroken group and non-linearly under the broken generators. So now, sorry?
All the fields.
What do you mean with all the fields?
Well, here you only consider one field. If you have all the fields, you would
have
all the fields.
Right.
You transform.
Yes. So there's another way. Then one can ask, what is the other parametrization? So the other parametrization amount to basically mixing the special conformal transformation with the P mu, and this was done in a paper of. Some Russian with this Italian, Bellucci. And they've found the way in which these two representations are connected. So if I substitute these generators in the conformal algebra, I just rewrite the conformal algebra in another way. Now this algebra looks completely different from the previous one. There are different terms which appears. And this will lead to the construction of different operators. And in particular, if one reparametrizes this element with new fields and coordinates, one can find what is the connection between the two realizations. And in particular, you can see that the two realizations are connected by a coordinate transformation, which crucially depends also on the fields and its derivatives. And also the field transform in a highly nonlinear way. And this can be achieved by simply equating the two Cartan forms. And so let me stress that this transformation is highly non-trivial. So if you expand it in terms of the field Q, and you literally replace in the action, for example, of pi, the coordinate transformation and the field definition, you find order by order the Lagrangians that appear in the DBI representation. So in full glory, the map is the following. So you can try to make some numerology out of this matrix. It's I don't know if you can find any deep reason of why these numbers are the way they are. But what is important to stress is that, first of all, the map is invertible. So this matrix can be inverted. And you can express the DBI representation in terms of the Vi Lagrangian.
So this have this different dimensions, this L5-1, L5-2, et cetera?
Ah, sure. Yeah, probably, yeah. But you can avoid this. You just redefine the fields in order that they have the correct dimension. Probably I forgot to put some. There is a dimensionless parameter in the DBI representation, which is this L. So now I don't remember, maybe there is a. If we go up. So it's contained in this Lagrangian. So you can fix them to have the same dimension. It's not. For example, in front of these, when you want to build the action, you put in front of this just 1/L^4, etc. Yeah, sorry, I've been maybe sloppy on the dimensions.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused about that because I mean, it seems that, I mean, if they have different, I mean, of course you're putting a number there, but usually, I mean, that's like something I can cut off of the theory. So if you go to like high energies, then only the term with high services matters. If you go to low energy, the term with low services matters. And those numbers there matter. But I guess, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's automatically taken care of here.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I think this is one of the points here.
Yeah.
Exactly, that doesn't happen. What you think was a marginal operator might become irrelevant.
Yeah. After. Yeah. If you want, also you can express in this way.
Okay. Depending on which one.
Yeah. In fact, for example, let me take this. Simple example. Now, even if you never worked with the Galilean operators and study. For example, the quadratic Lagrangian in the pi representations. So the point is that if you want to realize the parameterize the breaking of the symmetry in another way, you will have to deal with these three Lagrangians. So what it looks in one way in one representation looks another way in the other.
Is this related to this duality that you guys came up with, or is it the same thing? Or?
Yeah, I will come to the point later. Okay, so at this point, one can ask if it is possible to obtain the same sort of thing in the case of Galileans. So the group of Galileans, so the algebra is this one. So again, I've not written down the part which involves the Lorentz generator and the translation. So I think this name has been given by Kurt. This is 3+1 means that we are in 4 dimensions. And this one, I think it's because I have only one field. And so one can ask, is it possible that I can rewrite the Galilean operators in another way? So the answer is yes, but also no. And I will come to this point later. Well, actually, let me say now. So it is possible to rewrite it in another way, but the operators still look the same. So I don't obtain operators which are visibly totally different. They are the same operators, and I will come to this point later. But still, the fact that I can map this operator to another set of operators is because of the different representation that I can give to the Galilean algebra. So if you want to compare it with the conformal algebra, so you can replace here K instead of B and D instead of C. And you see that the algebra looks almost the same, apart from the fact that some of these commutators are zero and some other are a bit different. But they are so similar that in fact, one can take a group contraction of the conformal algebra just by replacing K mu with this B mu over epsilon and D with the C over epsilon. Forget about this, just this factor, which is not important here. And in the limit in which epsilon goes to zero, the conformal algebra just go to the Galilean algebra, which I've just shown here. So after this limit, the algebra is just this one. Now at the level of the coset, if I start with an element which is just pi c, and I replace c with epsilon d, I can see that I can call this field a new pi, and I have just the element of the coset given by the conformal algebra. So I can start with this operator, but the epsilon goes to zero limit means that this field goes to zero. And in fact, if I take the limit in which pi going to zero in these Lagrangians, and I take the first non-trivial term, I end up with just the standard Galileans with just with some funny normalization in front. And the same is also true for the twisted generators in which this hat K mu is the linear combination of K and P. And I can say I make actually the same contraction. So the same epsilon going to zero limit will apply. With a difference. So the difference is that in the algebra written by hat k and hat d, after the limit, the algebra looks exactly the same as this Galilean algebra. So if you want to pictorially, I start with the conformal algebra, and I go down to the Galilean algebra, taking this epsilon going to zero limit. But then I also can consider the twisted algebra, twisted in a loose sense, the algebra which has this linear linear superposition of the generators. And I can take the epsilon going to zero limit, but the epsilon going to zero limit lead to the same algebra. So this means that the operators which I will build up are actually the same. And I don't have to build them up from the coset, because actually I already build them up in the coset here. I can just take the limit and obtain the operators on the other side. But with another subtlety. The subtlety is that when I take, sorry, I think I got the wrong slide. The subtlety is that when I take the q going to zero limit of these operators, I do not find exactly the Galilean operators, but I found them in a linear combination. So I have also to take into account that I demix the operator afterwards to obtain the map between the Lagrangians of the standard Galileans. Okay, so let me skip this slide, which is just the Cartan forms, which is not important. And let me go to the map. So this is the map for the case of standard Galileans. You see that it's much simpler. In fact, it's just the q going to the q and pi going to zero limit of the conformal map. Sorry, the map of the conformal Galileans. And you can see that they still have to make a coordinate transformation which has a field inside and a field definition which is nonlinear in the fields on a different coordinates. But the coordinates transform as a scalar for this map. And in fact, all these three conditions are not even necessary, only two.
Is it the same as your dual? Okay,
yeah.
So why did you say it's not the same thing?
Well, it's obtained in a different context.
Okay, but I mean at the end.
And it's not for the same original.
Yeah, I can comment this later if you want. So in fact, only two of these conditions or equalities are necessary, and the third one can be obtained by two of them. And so at least for the physics to be the same, the map has to be invertible. And in particular, for example, one has to be able to write the determinant, when one changes coordinates, one has to write the determinant of the Jacobian of the coordinate transformation. And so if you permit me to be sloppy again with dimensions. Let me call this lambda as sorry, this L as 1 over lambda. Okay. So let me call L equal lambda to the minus 1, and also let me change the dimension for the fields such that I make the pi and the q with the same dimension. So one can check that the Jacobian is invertible if two derivatives apply to the field over q cube is much less than one. Here I've redefined q to take care of this lambda, so it's not important. And in fact, this is also the condition to obtain the third of these equalities from the two of them. So indeed, this condition is the condition of the invertibility of the map. Now, well, no, sure, yes. Yeah, I can take it smaller than one. The only thing that I have to take care is that the Jacobian is not zero. Sorry?
It could be bigger than one as well, couldn't it? Or
it should be on one side.
Well,
because I mean, the determinant is not. I mean, the point that the determinant of one plus that should be non-zero. That's the point, right?
So. Yes, which is exactly the loosely the Jacobian of
right.
These.
So that's So if that thing is much less than one, that's always the case. But if even it's it could be bigger than one, but the still determinant is not zero.
It's just by saying that it has to be much smaller than one, it gives the impression that every single one of the elements of this matrix has
okay.
to be smaller than one. But that's not the case.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And also, so this, since in general coordinate transformation, which depends on the field, are not standard, one can also express this map through a field definitions. But the field definition now looks infinite, and there are an infinite number of derivatives. But still, this coordinate transformation applied to the operators to the action of the operators that I've shown still produce the Galilean operators. So this definition produced the same change of a parametrization of the coset. So, and if you want, the picture is the following. So one can go through the map written for the conformal Galileans in the two different representations. In the limit, they lead to the Galileans, but here I'm taking the mixing of the Lagrangians. And so at the end, I have a matrix for the connect the two Galileans. And this matrix with the normalization that I consider for the Galilean Lagrangians looks the same. So it is much simpler than the map for the conformal case. Also here, I don't know if you can find any deep meaning to these numbers. But it comes out in this way. And taken as it is, this map is the same that was proposed in the case of bigravity theories by Claudia, Matteo, and Andrew. So then one can argue whether these two realizations are the same. And for example, one can calculate perturbative statements, like for example, the S matrix at some order. So for example, here I do it at three level. For example, the number go to action. So the number go to action, I think I wrote it, it's just the second Lagrangian minus the tuple in the DBI realization. Now, when I expand the Lagrangians up to the first contributing order, which is this, one have only this diagram to evaluate, and this gives rise to a two scattering, which has this form. And in particular, one can also do it in the other frame. So one can map the number go to action, which is exactly defined by this combination of Lagrangians on the other side. And on the other side, one can explicitly check that at three level, the scattering amplitude is the same. So the perturbative calculations agree. And
I mean, here at that level, there's only one combination of S, T, and U could have been. So there's only one check is just the overall factoring current. Did you try just for yourself to go to higher order? Then scattering amplitude, you see?
Not with this Lagrangian. I tried with another Lagrangian. I tried it with the free Lagrangian in the conformal case. So the Lagrangian so if you make a simple free definition, you can just recast these in this form, so it's a free Lagrangian, and a scattering zero. And on the other side, you can map it, and in particular, you see that this Lagrangian now is sent to this linear combination of Qs. Now there are a bunch of terms, and they all cancel. I checked this at three level again. 2-2. You were asking, sorry, like for example, higher scattering. 3-2.
It's just the 2-2. It's only one combination of ST in U that has to be left and go. So it's just the overall normalization inference. So it's not, there's not much chance to go wrong.
Okay, no, for higher, I didn't check. But let me also say that it is not expected to be any difference because for scattering amplitudes at any order, you can always expand the field definition. So any field definition which you can expand it is just a trivial field definition. Okay, this is one of many checks, yes.
From this LQ to
pi
from the...
No, so the connection between these two, it's the map that I've shown. But if you want to calculate some perturbative statement, you can expand the field definition up to the order that you need, and then it's just a field definition, so. Yeah, more on this later. And so the same can be done for also for the standard Galilean. And I think that, for example, you've done this check in the paper. And so the best action, the best Lagrangian that you can find is the Lagrangian for the free field. So this Lagrangian is rather trivial. It's unitary. So the S matrix is unity, it's analytic. The theory is to be complete. And he has a scattering amplitude zero, trivially. And you can map it in this mess of operators. At tree level, again, you have two operators to sum, and the sum is zero. So in particular, this term comes from the cubic, this term comes from the quartic, and it's zero. So perturbative calculation seems to work. So then one can ask whether it is possible to perform some non-perturbative calculation. And of course, non-perturbative calculations are not trivial. But one non-perturbative calculation that one can do is to consider the propagation of fluctuation around non-trivial backgrounds. And in particular, one can depict the action of the background as a sum of an infinite number of scatterings. For example, for this cubic interaction, you will have the forward scattering of these is modified by the presence of backgrounds. So in which sense this is non-perturbative? Well, it is in non-perturbative in the sense that I'm solving the dispersion relation of fluctuations. And it's non-perturbative in the sense that when I write a solution which looks like this wave function, wave propagating, I'm trusting the modification of the in the speed of sound, which depends on the background at any order at all in the background, just because I write it in the exponent. So if you want, this solution is non-perturbative and has an infinite number of q-bar, which are summed in the solution. So in particular, one can take the free theory. So in the free theory, of course, there's not much to say on this side. The theory is just propagates luminally. And one can ask whether this is also true on this side. And in particular, let me take the equation of motion for perturbation around a non-trivial background, which satisfies this inequality and is also time independent. So if I write...
It might be important for that. Do you really mean an equality, or you mean that every single
In this case, I'm considering this background, for example, to be unidimensional, for example. So this is actually two derivatives, two spatial derivatives acting on the background, which depends on one spatial component to be much less than one. And this is because I'm considering, so in this case, since this Lagrangian has four fields in the equation of motion at the second order, sorry, at first order in the equation of motion for fluctuation, they have two backgrounds, so they are suppressed respect to this term. So as I just said, the operator which contributes at the first order in the background It's just this cubic operator, which is actually the operator of the DGP. And the equation of motion for the DGP reads in this way.
So why are you keeping the cube over the cube?
Well, this is the first correction to the equation of motion.
Yeah, but it's much smaller than one, so it's just plus cubes.
Well, but again, it's the first correction. It's the leading correction. This correction is of course, subleading respect to this term, but it's a dominant respect to terms which are coming from the higher Lagrangians. And in the case in which the wavelength of the fluctuation is much shorter than the scale of variation of the background, or if you want, even here I can take a background which in which two derivatives acting on the background are just a constant. I can just solve the equation of motion. Perturbations will now travel not anymore on the Minkowski metric, since the background breaks Lorentz. I'm expecting that it will travel on an effective metric in which the leading correction is given by this term. And since this is linear in the field, this correction can have either sign. So for example, this effective metric can have a light cone which is broader than the light cone of Minkowski. And in particular, one can calculate what is the delay of the fluctuations with respect to fluctuation which travels on the Minkowski light cone. And at first order, the correction is this one, and it depends on the field evaluated, the derivative acting on the field evaluated at the boundary which I'm considering. Now, one can ask why these things are important. So these things are important because they have been used to rule out effective theories in the sense that it has been shown by, for example, Nima in this paper, that effective theories which have pathologies in the S matrix or have a superluminal propagation cannot be completed in a standard local and Lorentz invariant way. So now you understand fully the paradox. In this case, I have the free theory, and the image of the free theory is said not to be possible to complete it in a standard local and Lorentz invariant UV theory. And so let me give another. So a theory which, roughly speaking, behaves, so whose S matrix is analytic and unitary, if you want. Loosely speaking.
Like when you say standard, is it something that must be common? So, what is an example of that?
Free theory.
Okay.
For example.
I see.
So this, for example, was applied to the DGP model. And in particular, it can be shown that the solution for the classical solution for the DGP in the presence of a compact object of mass m. So in this case, the radii of the compact object is just here, basically. And it has been shown that, for example, fluctuation which travels in the radial direction on top of this classical solution can have superluminality. So for example, in this case, if you integrate the effect from zero to infinity, the velocity will produce a superluminal propagation.
So maybe which velocity is
it? In this case, it's the radial velocity.
No, but it's the velocity. It's not the speed of.
In this case, it's yes. In this case, yes. But for example, in the case of that I will consider later. So let me consider the case. So in this case, if you take this object to be just a constant, there's no difference between the group velocity and the phase velocity.
Yeah, because
well, not even with the front velocity, because this object is. So higher order derivative terms will still be subleading. So for.
All of this calculation is classical.
All this calculation is classic.
So it's not the front velocity.
Well, if you want to consider the front, so just for who doesn't know, so the front velocity is basically the omega going to infinity limit of the phase velocity. Now, if you want to make a calculation which is not classical and take the omega going to zero limit, you have to be able to know the UF theory. But all these are effective theory. So in the way that this theorem, in the way that these people consider these pathologies, why is it bleeding?
It doesn't agree with
it. It's biased. So in the way that people have considered, this is from the pure of effective theory. So which are the effective theory which cannot be embedded in Southern local and Lorentz invariant theory? So if one can disprove this, it would be very nice. But again, to consider this case, you need a UV completion for the theory.
Another way of putting this criticism is that there is nothing such as there is. I think this is a contradiction, a standard UV completion. I mean, the whole quest of physics, in some sense, is to find UV completion. So there's nothing the standard about it.
So, in what sense?
I mean, we don't really know what UV completion of anything is.
No, but I think everything really, like even Girard would think it will have a standard Boltzmann UV completion in string theory. We give you that. Whereas this tells you that these types of theories, if they do have a UV completion, it's not in the standard Boltzmann UV way, and you couldn't never derive it from string theory.
No, I mean,
so
I think it's just
you do appeal theories that are well behaved. Sorry, you do appeal theories that are well behaved.
Yeah,
and the force being most important.
I'm saying like. And
they're pretty special, but there are. But this is the same, right? Well, if you do the superluminal right there, you can't say operators that are series like separations are not going to commute. So you're violating what's usually the one of the basic axioms.
Yeah. No. I mean, I guess you do have two models of a UV complete that are not representation of our universe. So I guess I'm protesting that the use of the term as standard because.
Well, I think we've got a standard here in any way we understand that makes sense.
I think the standard is that it's more of like a particular point of view rather than anything standard. But the standard really refers to something that's tested in nature and known to be correct. But UV composition is not tested in nature.
For example, in this paper, these people consider different theories in which they integrate out some mode, and they show that the effective theory which comes from this. These particular example are well behaved, and so they were considering cases in which is not the case.
But I think it's true that there's no paradox so far. In one side it might be free, which tells you it is UV finite. In the other case, it's very complicated, and you know that it doesn't have a Wilsonian UV completion.
Right.
So there's no paradox.
Well, it depends. Right, but this is exactly the sense in which we think that the two theories are inequivalent.
One is UV complete.
The other has a UV completion which is not a Wilsonian.
It doesn't mean that it's not UV complete. You haven't shown that it's not UV complete.
It's a different UV completion.
That's right. There's no contradiction.
It's a UV completion which is not the standard one, if you want.
That's right.
I can rephrase it in this way. So in this sense, in this sense, this is the statement of our paper. The UV confusion, for example, which you think to give is not a Wilsonian UV confusion. In this sense, I call it this non-standard. So if you want,
But there's no paradox. There's not necessarily any equivalence. It's something really nice that you find there that it tells you that maybe there's something else than a Wilsonian UV confusion.
Okay. For example, I've not seen this UV completion yet, so we can discuss later if you want. So let me say now what is the solution of this issue now to us. So the first one is that I've shown you that the delay depends on how the background behaves, and in particular, if the background is localized. Since the delay depends on the background on the boundary, if you measure the superluminality outside, in fact, you will see no delay respect to a particle which is traveling on the Minkowski light cone. And this is true also at higher order. So if I include the operators which I was neglecting before, I still see this cancellation. And the precise coefficient of these operators, so these Lagrangian, give this cancellation. And this is not true, for example, in the DGP. So in the DGP, the integrated effect is not zero.
But again, you didn't say that it's written here in equivalence. So far, you're not showing that it's an equivalence.
Well, if I give a sense of the Minkowski light cone and particles do not travel on the Minkowski light cone, I can produce superluminality effects. Then, whether the question that this statement is not correct is another statement. I'm relying on what is.
Okay, so this is one thing, but now you're saying something else. Why it's in equivalent, but you're not showing that it's in equivalent.
Yeah, at this point they are still equivalent. For measurements which are outside of this background, they are still equivalent. You cannot see any sign of superluminality in this theory.
Yes,
which
in one case and not in the other case.
Okay, let me show you the example. So exactly, what happens if I consider, for example, measurement inside the background? So if I put my receiver inside the background. So in this case, one first of all has to ask whether the delay is measurable in the affected theory, and in particular, since the delay is this. And it has to be greater than the wavelength of the perturbation which I'm probing with. This means that if I push the frequency up to this cutoff, this condition applies. So the derivative of the background over lambda square must be bigger than one. And this is still in the regime of the effective theory. So it appears that this effect is also measurable in the effective theory. But then one has to ask how you measure this thing. And this is usually done by specifying what are the local operators of the theory. So this argument works only if one can specify what are the local operators of the theory.
So what do you say is the paradox? What is the paradox?
Well, the paradox is that one theory has no superluminal effect, the other has a superluminal effect.
Yeah, but it's a superluminality in the group velocity, and you're making a coordinate transformation. So why should
here I'm not making any coordinate transformation. I'm using.
In your equation 30, you show that the two representation correspond to a coordinate transformation. So what
yes,
would you expect?
But I also shown on equation 31, in which I said that this map is equivalent to making a field definition which is infinite, and the Lagrangians which are mapped with this representation are the same as with this field definition.
I mean, you can call it 31, we call it 31, or you can write it as 30, it doesn't matter so much.
In fact, we have an example in which one exactly make this coordinate transformation and the same thing appears.
That's right, so you're making this coordinate transformation, so why are you surprised that you're not getting the same group velocity in both cases?
Well, again, if you want to make a statement about Minkowski, you have to assume that there exist particles which travel on the Minkowski light cone. In this case, if you have particles which travels on the Minkowski light cone and particles which do not travel on the Minkowski light cone, and for example travels on a light cone which is broader than the Minkowski one, I can imagine a system in which in some region of space some particle which is, for example, this Q travels outside. At this point, it interacts locally with a particle which travels on the light cone and have some gap at infinity. So in this sense, if the Minkowski light cone has some meaning in the theory, in this case, you will observe superluminal effects. And these are associated
you
as... Well, if...
Or you're saying something else.
Here it's a superluminal group velocity, so it doesn't mean that you can send information past them or not.
Okay, so that's the
So all of this is just about the classical group velocity. So at any point we're saying that in one case you can send information faster than light and not in the other case. That no one has any clue about that.
Well, again, it depends on the completion. What I'm just saying is that this thing has been used to rule out the standard UV completion. So
maybe we should finish because it seems that you made your point.
Okay, but at the moment it's not necessarily a paradox.
But no, you haven't done the calculation of let's actually send a physical wave packet and see what it means on the supernova.
So the calculation. Yeah. So the calculation that we've done is to look that when one takes local couplings with, for example, external sources, as in this case in the pi representation, and one perform these field definitions, in this field definition contains terms which have this form. For example, there are n derivatives acting on the field, and there's a power which involves this parameter. And in the regime in which the superluminality is measurable, this parameter is of order one, and so this field definition cannot be truncated, but it can be resummed just as a Taylor series in this form. So in this form, I have the perturbation at linear order, which is coupled non-locally to a source in another point. So, and to us, this is a non-local coupling. In a recent paper, Claudia have shown that Claudia and Andrew and Keltner have shown that indeed one can also perform a transformation on the other field to avoid these non-local couplings. But again, the situation to us do not solve what we call paradox because just of this diagram. If I have particles which travel outside the Minkowski light cone and I have sectors which are not coupled to these, which travels on the Minkowski light cone because the Minkowski light cone has some meaning in this theory, I can still have these superluminal effects. So if one then want to say that these superluminal effects are not important because one needs the UV completion to calculate it, fine with that. Still, we think that this theory would not meet a standard local and Lorentz invariable completion. This is our statement. And I just rephrase it in this box. So okay, I'm going really out of time. So this is the upshot of the talk. So there are coset construction which realize a different breaking of the conformal symmetry and the Galilean group, which can be mapped to each other. And this map involves also space-time coherence, which depends on the field. In perturbative scattering, for example, of the theory of only Q or only pi, nothing happens, and the two theories are just simply equivalent. But one can map local coupling with other fields in non-local coupling if these other fields do not transform. And in particular, this is the case if the fields do not talk with the Broken generators. And in this sense, if one couple the map of this theory, for example, with an LT sector which moves on the light cone, one can have a violation of causality. And therefore, to us, the two coset construction leads to different physics. Okay.
So this equivalence, this was shown at the level of action, is that correct?
Or yes.
So the classical action.
Yes.
So that means that the classical actions are equivalent and the classical equations of motion should be equivalent, right?
Well, it depends, on the transformation that you do. You can make a crazy field definition, for example, field definition which are non-local, for example.
The actions are equivalent, the questions of motion should be equivalent.
Yeah, again, for standard transformation, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of what I'm a little bit confused with, because you're doing a classical calculation. What you call a non-perturbative calculation is just the classical.
A classic. Sure.
But if the field equations are the same, then
there has to be any difference. Again, on the background that I consider the equation of motion are different.
Yeah. No, but if the exact equation, I mean, you're making approximations, but if you're starting from this equivalent equations of motion, but you're making different approximations and you're finding consistent, then maybe it's the problem with that approximation.
Well, I don't think so, because so the equation of motion for the Galilean so have always two derivatives acting on the field, and I'm free to choose a limit in which there is a small parameter in this theory, which is two derivatives acting on the background, which is small. So this approximation, I don't see why this can be wrong.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.